good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 435, April the 4th, 1980, side one of the tape. The History Scam, that's the lead article of a Newsweek book review, October the 15th, 1979. This book is written by Francis Fitzgerald, published by Atlantic Little Brown. I haven't read it. I just had the review, and I did want to share it with you for a long time, and I just thought I'd bring it in on this tape today because America Revised, that's the name of the book, is about the problem with teaching history in the schools. She says that textbooks are put out by the school boards, special interests, state legislatures, and that they don't give you the real story of what's going on in the world, that they only give you a broad overview that protects a lot of specific interests and generalities are the cover story, that they don't tell you about things like the CIA, the military-industrial complex, multinational corporations. They don't give you names or specific people, and they stay away from individuals that make history. She says that actors in conflicts disappear and are replaced by abstractions, and the texts are uncertain as to what really makes history. And she even goes on to say that the information isn't necessarily what anyone considers the truth of things that goes into the textbooks of young people. When you talk about individuals or personalities making history, I have said over and over again that history is made and decided by bullets and blackmail. And this week, two persons are up for blackmail and could topple a lot of heads or a lot of activity that's going on behind the scenes. And very subtly, they're making threats now to talk. The first one is financier Michael Sindona. I've made many tapes on him, the links of the Vatican to organized crime, to the Giacana family, Sam Giacana family, the wheeling and dealing of American politicians with Vatican money and Vatican money in corporations, bank swindles, and that ball of wax. You can get that on those past tapes that I've done. New York Magazine has an article out this last issue on Sindona, and he's been indicted now. He's been convicted of 65 fraud charges at the Franklin National Bank in New York, and he's threatening to talk, and he's threatening to name people high up in government that he's passed money to as a bagman. At the time of Watergate, he offered $1 billion to Maurice Stans from the Vatican, which is a mingling of Vatican mob money, to reelect Richard Nixon, and according to Maurice Stans, he turned down the money, but there's no way of knowing that because as soon as the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel, Maurice Stans and employees of the committee to reelect the president went in and destroyed and burned all and shredded all the records of people that had given money to the campaign. And I'm sure that if the Vatican had given $1 million, that would have been the first piece of paper to be destroyed when the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. So what they said they did in terms of accepting or rejecting will only be known if Michael Sindona squeals. He doesn't seem to want to go to jail. He's a lawyer, multimillionaire at one time, worth maybe $30 or $40 million at one time, linked up with Montini, Secretary of the Vatican in Milan, helped set up the Milan Mafia, worked with organized crime, and took money from the Vatican. At one point, they lost $90 million, which I felt could go into weapons and gun running and rightist organizations that is only lost on paper. And maybe Michael Sindona doesn't want to take the rap. So he's threatening now to mention American politicians that he has funded for these various groups. Another man that's squealing is an ex-spy of the Central Intelligence Agency. He's an important person. His name is Donald Denisalia. You may or may not have seen it in your newspapers. He worked for the CIA for years. He's threatening to name 7,500 CIA agents, some who are hostages in Iran, unless drug charges are dropped against a friend of his, a cousin of the former prime minister of Iran. Mr. Bakhtiar was the prime minister under the Shah of Iran, and it's his first cousin who was arrested in Virginia. selling heroin to federal agents. According to this man that worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, let my buddy off, or I'm going to name which CIA people are in the embassy right now. This man worked for the SAVAK. He's been described by a CIA official as a man who can kill innocent people. He got names when he was on the duty of a CIA, people in Europe, Asia, and so forth. And he's threatening now, if you don't let Mr. Bakhtiar off the rap for the heroin arrest, I'm going to begin naming the CIA people overseas, and particularly in the embassy. And that's important because the embassy has some pretty big ones. I felt this all along, and that's why I felt we had a stalemate, because we don't have the full list, and they must know a lot in Iran that keeps Jimmy Carter from moving and keeps the stalemate going. February 22nd, 1980, I did a tape, that was just a few weeks ago, on the increase of heroin into the United States since the Shah was out. I've done maybe 5 or 10 tapes on the fact that one of the purposes of removing the Shah was to escalate the traffic of heroin from Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan to Germany and into New York. And the flow of the narcotics is up about 300% since the Shah was out. And I mentioned on that tape that there was an arrest at a restaurant in Chevy Chase, Washington, D.C., a owner, Mohammed Roshan, and also two people that work for him. One is Michael Bakhtiar, that's the person that this CIA agent wants off, and another one is Reza Mienges of Springfield. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but I'll spell it for you on the printed sheet. Now, these men, three of them were arrested in Washington, D.C., and a member of the Central Intelligence Agency came to release the gentleman arrested and come to their aid. And, of course, I've said the CIA has been a large purpose transporter and means of traffic of narcotics for many years, that the CIA works with organized crime and is part of the traffic, of course, from Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War and coming in from the Middle East at this time. This particular arrest involved 7 pounds of uncut heroin, which is the equivalent of $32 million at the time. $5 million was already put down and delivered to a bank when the arrests were made. It involved, as I say, Michael Bakhtiar, the cousin of the prime minister, former prime minister of Iran, and he and his two friends were relieved by the Central Intelligence Agency coming to their aid, and now a former agent of the CIA is saying, don't take them or touch them, or I will name CIA agents in Europe, Asia, and in the embassy. So these are two hot potatoes that I wanted to mention because they may get lost in the news and you may not have seen those articles. The Shah of Iran has made his last journey to Egypt, and he will be left there to die. He will stay there until he dies. I've said before that he was under house arrest through all of his travels, from Tehran, where he left in January of 1979. He went to Egypt, and then he went to Morocco and the Bahamas and Mexico and New York and Lackland Air Force Base in Panama, and now he's back at Egypt, and Mr. Sadat will keep him there. He was flown on a special plane that belonged to the Central Intelligence Agency. They couldn't use an ordinary plane. That's, I say, he's under house arrest. He can't call any plane. They will not divulge who called the plane or when it was ordered for him. The middleman is protected in this particular operation. All we know is that a man named Ward Eason, who's the president of Evergreen International Airlines, said that the middleman in the arrangements was not to be identified. They won't say who initiated the request, and except the fact that this was a CIA airline. Headquarters used to be in Oregon, Newburgh, Oregon. There were 19 of a large fleet used for special duty. This plane was dispatched from Detroit, another narcotics headquarter of the world, and sent down to Panama at DC-8, landed in Panama, and took the Shah to Iran. But this pilot, working with the CIA for a long time, and being a CIA Airlines, will be surely sworn to secrecy and will not talk about what the Shah said or what transpired on that airplane. Just suffice it that he has been under literal house arrest. You see, if he withdrew any of his money from the Morgan Guarantee Trust or the Chase Manhattan, those banks would go on a tailspin. He's not going to pull any money out. He's going to stay very quietly and die, and that will be the end of the Shah. And what happens to the Pahlavi Foundation after that will yet be seen in the future. The former prime minister of Iran at the time, just when the Shah left, was this Bakhtiar, whose cousin was the big heroin dealer in Washington, D.C. I mentioned at the time of the Abscam story breaking that Jeff Gerth was writing on it for New York Times. He's the expert on Richard Nixon and William Rogers, who's on the board of directors of the Pahlavi Foundation, and the crime figures in the Bahamas. An article came out in 1972 in Sundance Magazine, Nixon and the Mafia, and if it's not too expensive to copy, I might get some figures on what it would cost for you to get copies of this, because this issue is out of print. It talks about the men around Richard Nixon, John Connally, William Rogers, Will Wilson, and others with their links to organized crime. And it goes into the law offices that William Rogers had before he was on the Pahlavi Foundation as an attorney. And I mentioned his links last week to the Shah of Iran. Rogers was assistant attorney general and then attorney general, and worked in a law firm that represented gambling casinos and organized crime, and worked closely with the Shah of Iran. There was a whole connection of the Central Intelligence Agency, Richard Nixon, the Pahlavi Foundation, the Shah, the Bahamas, and the crime syndicate, the narcotics, and so forth. Any narcotics or activity of this kind that went through Iran had to go through the members, the family members of the Shah. There's no other way. The Pahlavi Foundation, the millions or billions, some of it could come not from exploiting the people in Iran, but accumulated wealth that was taken from their pocketing the drug market that they were able to control, and the people didn't get the use of that money any more than the organized crime or the narcotics market that's used here in the United States. That money doesn't go back to the use of the people. It's put in other institutions or organizations and businesses for crime members. Last week, I ran out of time on the tape, and I'm absolutely fascinated with the possibilities in the murder of Dr. Hermann Tanauer. And the reason I want to spend time on the tape on this, I should be going back more to Abscam. This single murder is obscured by so many little pieces of information that could possibly be put together, that I just want to thread with you and go through some of my ideas on the way this murder came down, or why it did. Because the murder of Dr. Tanauer happened again when the investigations of New Jersey, Philadelphia, and New York to narcotics traffic and organized crime are just being accumulated by the FBI. And also the members of organized crime that are being investigated are linked to the assassination of John Kennedy. We'll leave out the links to Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King, but Sam Giancana, Jack Ruby, John Rosselli, Carlo Prio Siqueiros, the anti-Castro Cubans, the whole ball of wax was very much part of the Kennedy assassination and the Philadelphia connections to the assassination and the Soviet Union connections, and they all have a part of this murder of Dr. Tanauer that has been fascinating me for the last week. So I just wanted to run down a few facts with you so you could save future articles on this and certain names that you may read or hear about later. Dr. Hermann Tanauer, known for the Scarsdale Diet, died March the 10th, 1980 in Westchester County. Gene Harris was the head of a very fancy school in McLean, Virginia, where many children of the Central Intelligence Agency and diplomats and public officials go. A very fine private school right under the nose of the CIA. She went to his house, and she said that she wanted to die. He wanted to live, and she wanted to die. So she didn't mean to kill him. She thought he would kill her. And her death wish, which she talks about, but she's very much alive, reminds me of the story that I referred to many, many times, The Control of Candy Jones. And if you don't have that book, get it. You can write to research, to Tom Davis. I'll give you the address again. And get the book, The Control of Candy Jones, a woman from the Central Intelligence Agency, a model who was given a double personality and traveled to South Korea or Taiwan and was tortured and used an alias, another name, and led a double life. And this Jean Hara seems to have had a double life following her all along, and very interesting woman, where things that she did overtly didn't seem to match what she was doing as with her occupation at the time. Dr. Tanauer had recently left her $220,000 in his will. He updated the will. He also left quite a bit to his help, too, which seemed a disproportionate amount under the circumstances, unless they were all part of a team. And, of course, that hasn't come out yet, and we don't know about that. He was described in the Associated Press as being fond of safaris, art objects, and fascinating dinner conversation, where, this is a quote, he brought together accomplished friends of divergent views for lively discussions of issues of the day. Now, if that isn't a vague statement of newscasting, I don't know what is. Divergent views, he took one view, and they, I guess, took another. We don't know if he's extremely right-wing anti-communist or whether he was somewhat on the left and his friends were anti-communist, or whether what the issues of the day were, whether they were political assassinations or crime, or we don't know what they were, but there's some implication of political differences here, never saying who the friends were, what the divergent views were, the issues of the day. It reminds me of Freddie Prinze, the actor who seemed like a happy-go-lucky TV star who was very much interested in a controversial subject on the Kennedy assassination, which was a divergent view from his producers and the people around him. He played the Abraham Zapruder film over and over on the way Kennedy was killed. He was going to Miami to find out who killed John Kennedy, and he was conveniently given a gun by his psychiatrist, Dr. Kroger, who worked on some famous California cases such as the Chowchilla kidnapping and other matters, and he was handed a gun at a time when he could be hypnotized and he was in a trance, and he killed himself. Now, Candy Jones was told to kill herself, and she was going to the Bahamas and jump into a shallow bit of reef there and be dead. And this woman, Mrs. Harris, left notes at her house at the school and also posted a letter thinking she would die. Candy Jones is alive, and Jean Harris is alive, but they were both told that they would die or thought they would. And, of course, the divergent views and the thing that Dr. Tanauer did, we have no idea where he traveled or what he did. She was headmistress at schools in Ohio, in Michigan, and Connecticut, and according to one article, she took the same vacations as Tanauer, and they had the same stockbroker. We don't know where she went with him at all. I do know she went to the Soviet Union in 1958, and I'll go into that later. She met Tanauer right after that, but we don't know what countries they went to, whether they were bagged people for the Central Intelligence Agency, organized crime, but I have a lot of suspicions on this case. Ms. Harris was brought up in Shaker Heights in Ohio. She graduated from Smith College with honors, a student of history and economics, and a woman in Washington, D.C., Enid Hyde, mentioned in the New York Times that she remembered her well as being well-ordered and in control of her life. I don't know if she's related to Ruth Hyde Payne, the woman who helped Marina Oswald and Lee Harvey Oswald for the Central Intelligence Agency. Ruth Hyde Payne has in-laws living in Washington, D.C. by the name of Hyde, but that was her maiden name, Hyde, and she has relatives there living in that area and in Philadelphia where Jean Harris lived, and I don't know if there was a relationship between those Hydes and Jean Harris in Philadelphia. She married James Harris from Grosse Pointe, Michigan, lived near Detroit, and of course in the book Mafia Wars and other books on organized crime, Detroit is the capital of drug and narcotic centers in the United States and organized crime. She taught history and economics at a day school. In 1958, she went to the Soviet Union. She was married and she had two sons, but she went alone to the Soviet Union in 1958. In 1959 is when Lee Harvey Oswald defected in October 1959. Every person in the embassy, American embassy in the Soviet Union that Oswald met was from the Central Intelligence Agency, a Mr. Snyder, Mr. McVicker, Priscilla Johnson. And 1 year after Ms. Harris goes to the Soviet Union, going from Philadelphia area, to the Soviet Union. A year later, Lee Harvey Oswald arrives in the Soviet Union, and then he is to go to the Dallas-Fort Worth area and be with people from the Philadelphia area, George de Morenchil and Ruth Payne, who came from Philadelphia, where Jean Harris lived. Her trip to Soviet Union and her double personality and her secrecy make me wonder who she was and what she was doing. She was described in one news account as being a very secretive. She never confided in anybody. Her husband divorced her and claimed cruelty. After he divorced her, he died in 1977, the year that she was hired at Madera School in McLean, Virginia. The school that she worked at before, the Thomas School, had folded, so they said they couldn't get recommendations from her because the school folded. And her husband was dead that year, and they allegedly didn't know about Dr. Tannauer. That was a secret life that she had, which all seems hardly unlikely for a school in McLean, Virginia, that has such wealthy private children in this kind of a private school, that they would check out the headmistress, who has access to their home address, the ages of the children, the siblings, the family, and so forth. The Washington Post describes her secret life, and that they weren't aware of what she was doing, even though the book that Dr. Tannauer had has her name in the book and gives her credit for helping him with the diet book, which she actually didn't do. They claim they didn't know about her. They've been friends for 14 years, and they concealed this relationship from people that she worked with. As I say, the people that hired her didn't seem to know about the book. And in Washington, nobody ever heard her speak of Dr. Tannauer, very few of her acquaintances. According to the Washington Post, she kept a strict separation between her professional accomplishments and her private misery. That's an interesting word because, again, Candy Jones has her professional accomplishments in New York City, in the agency that she worked in, modeling and so forth, but her private misery was her intelligence work, where she was sent for double operations, double name, hypnotized, and even told to kill herself, just as this Miss Harris said she was supposed to die. At work, she's described with her black skirt or white blouse, keeping appointments, being very functional in an administrative job. On the other hand, she is visiting and traveling and going off with Dr. Tannauer. Some interesting help at the house of Henry van der Vrecken, I don't know, from Amsterdam, I don't know. They were given a large amount of money, $64,000. Jean Harris was willed $220,000. A associate nurse who took trips with Dr. Tannauer when Jean Harris was working at the school got another $190,000 or $200,000. She got, and her children got another $190,000, which seems like a tremendous amount of pay for the people that work for Dr. Tannauer. The attorney representing Jean Harris is the former county judge from Westchester County, Judge Arnoux, the one who ran to the post office to get the letter that she wrote and to the home to get the letters before the prosecutors could get there. They call them the Scarsdale letters because she posted letters believing she would be dead, just as Candy Jones believed that she would be dead when she went to the Bahamas. But again, both women were left alive and didn't die. Now, this woman moved to Philadelphia. She lived at Chestnut Hill in Philadelphia. When the AmScam story was breaking, the FBI chief that used to live in Philadelphia described Pennsylvania as a cesspool of crime, injustices, and corruption. And I've used that quotation many times. I'll use it over and over again. And he moved to New York to begin to investigate this cesspool of what was going on. The Philadelphia connections in the assassination of Kennedy, John Kennedy, are many. Arlene Specter, the district attorney from Philadelphia, was a member of the Warren Commission who made up that Bullet 399 story, that famous Bullet 399. Senator Richard Schweiker was supposed to investigate the second opening of the Kennedy assassinations from Philadelphia. George de Morenchild married into the Sharples family. He worked in the OSS and the CIA and set up counterintelligence as a Nazi spy, and with the White Russian group, his connections came out of Philadelphia. Grace Kelly went from Philadelphia to marry Prince Rainier of Monaco, and then Samuel Cummings, the gun merchant of the world, moved to Monaco. He worked with the CIA, went from Philadelphia and the CIA to Monaco to set up headquarters, and then London. He's the largest gun merchant, gun salesman in the world, and I'll do a little more about him later. And it was in Philadelphia that this headmistress or schoolteacher, history student from Smith, who had been to the Soviet Union, met Dr. Herman Tannauer. She left the Philadelphia school to move closer to him in Connecticut at a Thomas school. And then when the school folded, at that school she used the name J. Struven, her maiden name. She wasn't under the name of Harris at that school. And then when this school folded, she went on to work for a Allied Maintenance Corporation company in New York City. She had frequent outbursts. According to Washington Post, she had the type of behavior, and I might have mentioned last week, that Candy Jones had, where she would scream out, and there was a scene in a drugstore where there seemed to be a personality change, and she wanted a drug that Tarnauer had prescribed for her, and the druggist wouldn't fill it, and she was calling and was acting in a loud, embarrassing way, to the point where the school headmistress had to have the police come to calm her down in this drugstore, talking loud, and had to be calmed. And it reminded me of the outburst that Candy had when she lost her personality of Candy Jones and became Arlene Grant. It was uncontrollable, and then we get back to be Candy Jones again. When she left that one school, she went to work 1955 to 1977 for Allied Maintenance. And that's when I began to get suspicious about this Harris woman, because not only were the Abscam story breaking, but she went from a janitorial service to being headmistress of a very fine school in McLean, Virginia, and it seemed like a strange jump. And also, I had read the name Allied Maintenance recently in an article, and I looked through my files. It was linked in some way to organized crime. It's a janitorial service at Madison Square Garden and takes care of other large buildings in New York. She was getting $32,000 a year. And if any of you eager beavers look up the stories, I may find it by the time I hear from you, on who bought Madison Square Garden and the Combine, because many people from drug connections and organized crime are linked to maintenance corporations, and the CIA intelligence are linked to cleaning services. So here was a history teacher from Smith who had been to the Soviet Union, making travels, a secret double life, described by her friends as an actress, working for a janitorial service in Madison Square Garden, and then leaves there and takes a $10,000 decline in salary to go to McLean, Virginia, to work at this private school in McLean, Virginia. It was a strange transition, and considering all the places she had been, I was interested in it, and I also have been interested recently in the clinging services and the relationship of them to the intelligence community. Our local congressman, Leon Panetta, is trying to fight the fact that the Reverend Moon Organization has a clinging security service, and they clean government office buildings. They have access to FBI offices, military facilities, and space satellite stations at Edwards Air Force Base, the home of the Space Shuttle Project. And just last week, Leon Panetta was fighting the fact that the Unification Church has contracts to clean the FBI buildings, Air Force bases, and the federal government. They have an organization called International Exchange. It's based in Oakland. They've been clinging government installations for 5 years, and they're going into Fort Ord, and they work with carpet companies and clinging services. They're in Monterey County and in Stockton, and they use government warehouses and naval installations. And Leon Panetta has been asking how they have the right to get to these places when they're linked to Reverend Moon, and the church has been linked to the Central Intelligence Agency. Panetta rightly is saying that it is a tool, the Moon Church is a tool of the Korean CIA, and what are they doing cleaning up these office buildings where they have access to all of this information, the keys, and the ability to go in and cling these offices. The maintenance clinging services are linked to the intelligence community, the CIA, and organized crime. On the other side of this tape, we'll talk about another clinging service and maintenance corporations, because it caught my eye when I read that Ms. Harris went from the Allied Maintenance to this private school in McLean, Virginia.